too. It seems that Londoners don't like hearing about their imminent destruction, and Holy Peter's is a regular visitor to the casualty department, with a blackened eye or bloody nose. The strange thing is that he never warns the doctors or the nurses of the end of the world. Perhaps he feels a little more optimistic when he's sitting indoors with a rug over his knees and a hot cup of tea. John quickens his pace, not wanting to be accosted, but he hears the prophet's voice as he approaches the short flight of stairs that will take him down to the Thames path. "The Lord will send his vengeance. It will come out of the sky, a thunderbolt of flame that will fall on London and devour all those who have failed to repent." Rubbish. The good Lord will not destroy London. It's been years since he even remembered it was there. John knows, how many times has Nurse Hudson told him, that he shouldn't go home along the embankment. The wall that separates the river walkway from the road above provides the perfect cover for thieves and cutthroats. But for him, the road is worse. People and vehicles lunge at him out of the darkness, and the occasional retort of a hoof against the asphalt is enough to make his heart pound. No. Down there, it is a more easeful journey, and his army-issue revolver is a reassuring weight in his pocket. He dares not leave it at his lodgings. He's certain the landlord goes through his belongings, but there's a sturdy padlock on the hospital locker where he can stash it while he's at work. He's glad he has it now. As he walks down to the Thames path, the silence rises to swallow him up, and his senses snap to alertness. He can't help it. Years on the battlefield have made him hypervigilant to the slightest sound or flash of movement. Not that he can see more than 5 paces ahead of him. The embankment wall is a strip of shadow to his right, and beyond it, keeping noiseless pace with him, is the river. He can hear the splash of greasy water against the brickwork, smell the effluent from factories and sewers that always finds its way here. The tide must be high again. Somewhere downriver, the lightermen are calling to one another, and there is the occasional mournful honking of a barge as it transports goods to the docks away to the east. It makes him think of exotic fruits and spices, a stark contrast to what he'll have for his supper. He can only afford a single room for his lodgings, so he can't lay in stores. If he remembers correctly, there are some tins of sardines and corned beef in the cupboard, along with a 3-day-old loaf of bread. But it is the thought of the half bottle of scotch that really makes his mouth water. A tumbler or two of that, and a good book always help the evening pass. A third ensures he'll get some sleep. When he first took the room, high in the attic of a once grand Georgian townhouse whose stucco is now falling off in leprous chunks, he was concerned that the other occupants might disturb him. Every other room is crammed with families and there's a new baby on the floor below, but he needn't have worried. The children are too busy fighting with one another, chasing each other around the streets or kicking a ball against the red brick walls to take any notice of him. He's helped quite a few of them with the inevitable accidents of urban life. He has access to bandages, cough linctus, pills and powders, and some evenings he has returned with the little packages he's managed to pilfer to treat a child in need. He knows it's wrong, but with the hospital so crowded, they would only be turned away. John quickens his pace as best he can, his bad leg dragging behind him, his arms crossed over his chest against the chill. He has left Holy Peter's behind now, but, remembering him, glances up at the sky. The clouds are low and oppressive. There are no thunderbolts of flame. Looks as if London is safe for another night. Up ahead, something moves in the fog. He stops. A shape he cannot make sense of jerks on the pavement. It has too many limbs, like the black goddess worshipped by some of the Hindu soldiers he used to know. A cry rises in his throat, and his muscles tense for flight. Then the shape dismantles itself into 5 parts, 4 of which unfurl and stand upright, leaving 1 lying prone on the ground. At first he thinks he's looking at creatures out of a horror story, wraiths or zombies feeding on a corpse. He has interrupted them, and now they are standing silently, watching him, deciding what to do. He draws the revolver from his pocket. It's as if he has sent a signal. One of them lets loose a cackle of cruel laughter, and a moment later the shapes are moving towards him. As they draw closer, he can make out the dull gleam of steel.